You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I'm vaccinated. I've been vaccinated since March. That's when I got the one-shot J&J vaccine. But I recently got a second shot last Thursday, a booster, which I got because I was concerned, because every single story I read about the rapidly spreading Delta variant said you had nothing to worry about if you'd already been vaccinated. But weirdly, none of those stories for weeks and weeks mentioned the J&J vaccine, only Moderna and Pfizer. If you got the Moderna or Pfizer vaccines, nothing to worry about, dot, dot, dot. I can be a bit of a hypochondriac, I know. I also know that all hypochondriacs are vindicated at some point. So if my doctor's okay, I got a booster shot. I got the Moderna. The next day, Friday morning, a million stories came out heralding a new study showing that the J&J vaccine was effective against the Delta variant too. I felt bad. My booster shot was going to get sent to some place where it was more desperately needed if I passed. But still, I felt guilty. I felt bad. And later that night, I started to feel worse. I got hit pretty hard with the side effects. Better than dying of COVID, and 99.2% of all recent U.S. COVID deaths are among unvaccinated people. So I will take the side effects, thank you. I didn't get out of bed until pretty late in the day on July 4th, Sunday, the date Joe Biden set a goal for 70% of Americans to have gotten at least their first shot. At 70%, we could safely open the country back up. We sadly didn't hit that goal. We're at 66.8% of Americans over the age of 18 having gotten at least one shot. So close. But it's going to take us some time to get the rest of the way there. Because fucking Republicans. Almost all blue states that voted for Biden, are already at 70% or higher. We're at 75% in California and Washington, 70% in Oregon. Vermont leads the blue state pro-science, pro-life pack at 85%. And the red states? Mississippi, Louisiana, Wyoming, Alabama, Tennessee, West Virginia, Idaho, Arkansas. Basically, name a red state and it's nowhere near 70%. Most below 60%. Some below 50%. Looking at you, Miss-a-fucking-sippy. After reading about how J&J protects you from the Delta variant and how I didn't need to put myself through another round of horrible side effects, I read about all the unvaccinated Trump supporters pouring into Branson, Missouri, a state that is only 55% vaccinated, which has public health officials tearing their hair out. COVID cases have more than doubled in the last 2 weeks in Missouri, and hospitalizations up 20%. The more infectious Delta variant running rampant in Missouri right now, and every unvaccinated asshole pouring into the Osmond Family Theater in Branson, Mo for the Darwin and Marie show gives the virus another chance to mutate into something that can defeat the vaccines we've got and turn the clock back to April of 2020. Maybe they think that'll make Trump president again. Missouri, I'm sorry, Missouri, I'm just going to harp on you. Missouri, 3 weeks ago, Missouri's fucking Republican governor signed into law a bill that bans proof of vaccination requirements and restricted local health authorities from responding to pandemics at all. And now that same governor, 3 weeks later, 3 weeks after signing that bill, is asking the Biden administration to send help for their surge of new infections. And Biden should send help. And Biden will, because he's not fucking Trump. He's not going to do to red states what Trump did to Puerto Rico after the hurricane or California after the wildfires. But man, federal support for red states should come with strings. Like federal money for highways comes with strings. Make vaccinations, I don't know, mandatory if you want to go inside. If you want to stay home, stay home. You want to go inside any place else, inside a cruise ship, a theater, a restaurant, a school. You want to see Donnie and Marie live? You got to get a shot and bring proof of vaccination. Zooming out for a second, what's really going on here? Why they're not getting vaccinated in red states? Why Tucker Carlson and Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson are out there encouraging people, their people, not to get shots? And you know those two motherfuckers are vaccinated. It's just about denying Joe Biden a win. They don't care how many people they have to kill, including red state Americans, to deny Joe Biden a win. Just like they don't care how many people bridge collapses kill in red state America. Gotta deny Biden a win on infrastructure, too. The Republican base, the Trumpers, I don't think they're that stupid. They know Tucker is vaccinated, and Trump and Ron Johnson. They know COVID, like climate change, is real. They know vaccines work. They're risking their own lives and the lives of their children and the lives of every person on the planet to own the libs. A new and deadlier variant could emerge from the Grand Country Buffet in Branson at any moment, and they don't care. They kind of want it. What a moment in history. It's like sharing a country with 74 million Neros, 74 million Hitlers in the bunker at the end. They're willing to burn it all down if they can't have it all their way. If they were only going to take themselves out, I wouldn't care. I mean, I'm a liberal. I'm a progressive. I'd care. Of course, I'd care. I can't help but caring. But if their actions weren't endangering the whole world, only themselves, maybe I could find a way to care less. All right, coming up on the show, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's on the micro free Savage Lovecast and on the Magnum Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. Dr. Paul Pottinger joins me to talk about MRSA, Savage Lovecast Magnum, twice as much show, more questions, more guests, no ads, and special bonus content for subscribers. Subscribe at savagelovecast.com. All that coming up on today's show. This episode is brought to you by Helix Sleep, the best mattress for your individualized comfort. Right now, my listeners get up to $200 off all mattress orders at helixsleep.com/savage.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Pill Club, the birth control subscription that's delivered right to your door. Get a special care package with your first delivery. Go to thepillclub.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I am a 32-year-old cis female that newly realized I am bisexual. I have an emerging from quarantine success story for you. P.S. Everyone involved in this story is fully vaccinated. My boyfriend and I have been dating about a year and a half, and although we have been essentially monogamous, we have discussed and fantasized about opening up our relationship, likely starting with a threesome with another woman. I have fantasized about women and made out with a girl at a bar once, but otherwise I had not have found ever been with a woman, and I wasn't sure if I was truly bisexual or just liked the idea of it. Anyway, we've been waiting for the right opportunity for a threesome, which is hard during a pandemic, and enjoyed fantasizing about one until it happened last weekend, when a girl that my boyfriend hooked up with, in a threesome, I might add, right before he met me, hit him up, eagerly suggesting they hook up that night. He came home very excited and asked if he should reply, suggesting the three of us go out and hook up. She was all for it. We got drinks and went back to our place. It was an amazing time. Her and I started making out in the car. We all quickly got naked once back at the house. Her and I both sucked on my boyfriend's cock together. She was playing with and sucking on my tits while he was fucking her. He was fucking me while I was eating her pussy. We were eating each other's pussies while he was fucking her. We all came at different times and he came on both of our faces at the end. I feel like a whole new world has opened up for me, and my boyfriend's pretty excited about it too. And, needless to say, I'm a lot gayer than I thought.
Cocks got sucked, tits got played with, pussies got eaten, you got fucked, she got fucked. Everything happened to everything except listening to your call. I couldn't help but think about those three poor, sad, neglected buttholes. The three of you got to get back together and eat some ass and fuck some ass. And I think you two should tag team him. You two should fuck his ass. But otherwise, a terrific sex success story. Thank you for calling. Thank you for sharing. We like to start each week's show with a success story. If you've got a good one, give us a call, share it, and we might start next week's Lovecast with your success story.
Hi, Dan. So there's this guy that is an acquaintance of mine, not a close friend, but an acquaintance, loves to post naked pictures of himself on like Instagram. They often get flagged and removed because his dick is showing. He's always talking about how people need to get comfortable with nudity and how the naked human body is not offensive. And, like, I agree with that. I do. I don't think I'm a prude, but I also, I don't know, something about it feels kind of, like, non-consensual. Like, I love dicks, but I'd like to consent to what dicks I'm seeing. He also posted this, like, long rant on Facebook going into, like, a lot of detail about orgasms, his orgasms. And I don't know, it just feels inappropriate, but is it? Am I just a prude? Because I don't think that I am, but something about it just really strikes me as, like, inappropriate and, again, kind of, like, non-consensual.
I couldn't say whether you're a prude or not. Not enough facts and evidence to determine whether you're a prude or not. But you're not helpless. If you don't like the shit that this guy is posting to Instagram, if you think that his rationalizations for why he posts what he does to Instagram are insincere, if you don't like the stuff that he posts to Facebook, un-the-fuck follow him on Instagram and Facebook. You are consenting in a way to seeing the shit that he tosses up on his social media when you follow him on social media. If he's abusing Instagram to share dick pics far and wide with people who may not want to see his dick pics or didn't realize that they were signing up for dick pics when they first followed him, unfucking follow him. You don't have to continue to follow him after the first, second, third, fourth, 50th, 60th, 90th dick pic pops up onto your phone. And if you don't like the shit he posts on Facebook, unfollow him. He's an acquaintance. He's not a close friend. You don't even have to have a conversation with him about why you've unfollowed him. He's highly likely to even notice that you've unfollowed him. So yeah, I think it's highly likely that he's putting dick pics on Instagram because he likes the idea that people out there are seeing his dick. And then he argues that this is about celebrating the human body. There may be a lot of exhibitionists out there who are flying under the body positivity radar. You aren't obligated to follow them. I'm not obligated to follow them. He's not entitled to your eyes. So take your eyes off the content that he is creating. Unfucking follow the exhibitionist. Do you need to renew your birth control prescription? Want to switch your birth control? Maybe try birth control for the first time? Whether you know the brand you want or you want help finding the best option for you, the Pill Club medical team has your back. The Pill Club is a birth control subscription prescribed by a medical professional and delivered straight to your door for free in discreet packaging. The Pill Club carries over 120 FDA-approved brands. Most brands of birth control are free with insurance or Medicaid. Otherwise, prices start as low as $9 per month without insurance. What's more, their licensed medical team is just a text away to give you the best reproductive health care. So skip the office and waiting in line at the pharmacy and join the Pill Club. Right now, when you go to thepillclub.com/savage, the Pill Club is offering a $10 donation to bedsider.org for every Savage Lovecast listener who becomes a patient. Your donation will help low-income individuals get access to birth control through bedsider.org. That's thepillclub.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you to get your first birth control care package and donate $10 to help more people in need of affordable birth control. Remember, thepillclub.com/savage. You must use the link to make a donation.
Hi, Dan. I have a question about cleaning out before anal play. I have one of those toilet bidet attachments, and I've been using it to clean out. I shoot the jet of water up my butt, and I find it really convenient and refreshing. But I'm wondering if this is a safe and healthy way to use that attachment, or if I should use an enema kit instead.
Dr. Evan Goldstein from Bespoke Surgical was on the show a few weeks ago, and we talked about the fact that most people who do anal play these days, it seems, clean out. They douche before anal play. And the doctor, although he sells a line of douche products, doesn't think that that's necessary. He sells a line because a lot of people are more comfortable with anal play after douching. People shouldn't use commercial or chemical douches for that. Better to use douche bulbs or the safe products that Dr. Evan Goldstein makes available as an alternative if someone's going to douche. But a little water in the rectum, a douche bulb, not an enema kit. You're not trying to clean yourself out. The poop up in your digestive tract until you're about to have a bowel movement is usually pretty high up. It moves down into the rectum right before you have a bowel movement. Unless you're deep fisting, the only part of your ass that's really in play during anal sex or most anal play with most anal toys is going to be the rectum. So a small douche bulb, a small amount of water introduced into the rectum that then you expel is going to leave you clean enough for anal. If you're using the attachment on a bidet, like a Tushy bidet, longtime advertiser, great product, have one myself, use it all the time. It's unlikely that you're filling your rectum with water unless you have good control and you can open your sphincter and allow the water to shoot up into your rectum. But if you are able to do that, that's just douching and that sounds fine. If you aren't able to do that, what you're most likely doing with your Tushy is just cleaning off your asshole, not cleaning out your butt. Whichever it is, cleaning off or cleaning out, this is safe. It also, if you have a healthy diet, you get a lot of fluids that aren't just coffee and Coca-Cola or Diet Coke, and there's a lot of fiber in your diet, and when you have a good bowel movement, you're empty, it could be unnecessary for you to douche like this. Necessary, of course, and courteous to make sure your ass is squeaky clean before anal play. But if you have good regular bowel movements, the inside of your ass, it's probably safe enough for anal play without douching.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Oh, do you fancy yourself some kind of JavaScript wizard, huh? Adept at the R and MATLAB programming languages? Do you prefer PHP or Perl? Yeah, you don't know what I'm talking about, do you? Fortunately, we all have Squarespace. They make it easy to put together a fantastic website, blog, or online store. They have everything you need. Domains, marketing tools, analytics, e-commerce. Squarespace empowers millions of creative types and entrepreneurs by providing them with the tools they need to bring their creative ideas to life. Squarespace can help you get your creative project or business venture off the ground. For instance, you can present your work using Squarespace's professional portfolio designs, display projects in one of their customizable galleries, and add password-protected pages to share private work with clients. Everything you make with Squarespace translates perfectly to mobile. And if you ever need help, they have 24/7 support, baby. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage, and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 27-year-old female from the Midwest, and I've been dating a guy for 3 years. We recently moved in together. He does have a history of drug use. He says it's recreational, and we have done drugs together. And when we have done coke together, he just gets really honest and started throughout the 3 years, piece by piece, telling me his history. So he was abused at 3 years old. He would hook up with guys in high school. He would go on Craigslist and solicit sex for money, he said. He cross-dresses, and he has a fantasy of cuckolding, which we have tried with a friend, and we did not go about the threesome right at all, so we kind of took it. It was not a good experience, so we talked through it and figured out we're not going to do that for a bit. So in the 3 years, we fight a lot about drugs and smoking and binge drinking, and it always ends with, okay, I'll stop. Our most recent blowout was this past weekend, and I walked downstairs, and he was doing coke in women's lingerie with the guy that we had a threesome with. And I told him we were done. I was mostly upset about the drugs behind my back. So my question is, am I foolish for giving him another chance? He's begging for another chance. This past week, he's quit everything. He's trying to go to therapy and trying to change his life around. So my question is, is there hope for this relationship, or am I just being foolish by giving him chances?
There's nothing wrong, I think, with most recreational drugs if you can use them without abusing them. Doesn't sound like your ex-boyfriend was capable of using without abusing. Same goes for alcohol. Nothing wrong with enjoying a cocktail or two every once in a while, but you got to be moderate about it. Gotta not abuse alcohol. Doesn't sound like your boyfriend, if he's binge drinking, is capable of enjoying alcohol, enjoying that drug, using that drug without abusing it, at least right now. Also, nothing wrong with cuckolding fantasies, nothing wrong with cross-dressing, nothing wrong with being bisexual. But just as your ex-boyfriend, and I think he should remain your ex-boyfriend, I'm just going to tip my hand there, spoiler alert, doesn't sound like he has a healthy relationship with drugs or alcohol, also doesn't have a healthy relationship with his desires. He was abused. He may be experiencing some deep-seated conflict. He may be attributing some of his sexual interests or desires to that abuse. Perhaps there's a tie, something he needs to work on with a counselor, with a therapist, to get to the bottom of, which is just a long way of saying, not in good working order, your boyfriend, your ex-boyfriend, he should remain your ex-boyfriend, not in good working order, not healthy enough, not just to have a relationship with drugs or alcohol or cuckolding or other men, not healthy enough to have a relationship with you, not healthy enough to be in a relationship, doesn't deserve you. So he says he's going to therapy, he says he's quitting. Great, he should go to therapy and he should quit. That doesn't mean you have to take him back. It might not actually be helpful for you to take him back. You don't want him going through the motions at therapy or attempting to quit just to get you back, because then as soon as he has you back, he loses all motivation or the motivations that he had to get therapy, to get help, and to quit using and abusing drugs and alcohol. So, yeah, if he quits, if he goes into therapy and gets to a healthier place, maybe you guys will run into each other in 3 or 4 or 5 years' time, and you could pick back up then, but you shouldn't pick back up now. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Helix Sleep. Maybe you all heard about how we in Seattle had some rather warm days recently. Well, we were so grateful for our Helix mattress. Oh boy, they keep you cool if you sleep hot. And pretty much everybody in Seattle last week was sleeping hot, and our mattress helped us get through those days. Helix Sleep personalizes your mattress by having you take a quick quiz that matches your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. Terry and I matched with the Lux Midnight mattress because we wanted something that has a medium firmness, and we both tend to move around at night. They have several different mattress models to choose from, soft, medium, and firm mattresses. Mattresses great for cooling you down if you sleep hot, and a Helix Plus mattress for plus size folks. So if you are looking for a mattress, go to helix.com, take the quiz, order the mattress that you're matched to, and the mattress will come right to your door, shipped for free. You don't ever need to go to a mattress store again. Just go to helixsleep.com/savage, take that 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it, but they're not going to need to pick it up because you will love it just like we love ours. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/savage. That's helixsleep.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I am a woman in my 30s, and I've been with my partner for about 6.5 years. I've always been the more open one, a little bit more kinky. He's maybe a bit more on the vanilla side. More recently, he's been requesting for some wandering time and some solo journeying. And I've brought up maybe we should have some openness in our relationship. I've also brought up the possibility of him maybe seeing a dom. I have some friends in the industry. I think that would have been great for his control issues. Yeah, so with that context, he recently told me that he cheated on me by going onto a not-so-professional website, finding a dom, going to meet with the dom, doing sexual acts, and then getting an STD, and then sleeping with me the next day. So I feel pretty hurt in the situation, as I was pretty open to him exploring as long as there was communication and boundaries, and this kind of just feels like he took a fat shit on that. I'm pretty into ending this relationship, but yeah, any tools, insights, and anything would be greatly appreciated.
Tools. The tool you need to end this relationship is in your hand, it's the same tool you use to contact me, your phone. You can give him a call, tell him it's over. You can text him and tell him it's over. Insights? Well, yeah. Sounds like you want to end this relationship. I encourage you to end this relationship. What the fuck was he thinking? What the fuck was he doing? You had communicated to him over the 6.5 years you were together that an open relationship was on the table, that ethical non-monogamy was on the table. And you thought maybe, given his control issues, and I don't necessarily think BDSM is a corrective for control issues, but you knew him well enough sexually and emotionally to think he might enjoy, vibe with a pro dom. And then he went and found one, sounds like a sketchy one, behind your back through a disreputable website. A pro dom who had sexual contact with him, unsafe sexual contact with him. He got an, I don't need to tell you this, you just told me this. He got an STD and then had sex with you the very next day. Presumably he didn't realize he had an STD when he slept with you. Most people don't become symptomatic within 24 hours. But still, he had unsafe sex and put you at risk needlessly, unnecessarily. And what does that say about him? Well, it says that he doesn't care about your health and safety. It says that he's selfish. It says that he's kind of stupid and could be evidence of a more toxic form of controlling behavior. He knew that you were open to an open relationship, but having an open relationship, agreeing to an open relationship, would have opened the relationship for you too. And sounds like the evidence here suggests that he was only interested in it being open on his side, which is why he hid it from you. And probably the only reason you found out about it was when you, I'm assuming, when you came down with that STD and he was your only sex partner. So it could have only come from him. And at that point, he had to confess. And if you hadn't come down with that STD, odds are good that he would have done this again. And we can infer at least the possibility that he's done this before and didn't contract an STD and so didn't have to tell you about it and so hasn't told you about it. I think it's over. I think this is disqualifying behavior, deal breakers all around. And yet, I have heard from so many people who stumbled into open relationships because somebody cheated, somebody got caught, and it was a big, awful mess and sometimes an unnecessary mess. Sometimes a circumstance very like your own where one person was raising the issue of opening the relationship with boundaries and mutual consent. And the other person did something very similar to what your boyfriend did and got caught for similar or other reasons and then renegotiated the terms of the relationship in a crisis stage and had to apologize and make amends and work their way back into the good graces and re-earn the trust of their partner. I've talked to so many people over the years whose partners cheated on them unnecessarily. Partners didn't have to cheat. They had said to their partners, look, if you ever want to have sex with somebody else, just talk to me about it in advance and be safe. And then their partner didn't talk to them about it in advance and wasn't, and perhaps also wasn't safe physically, in addition to not being safe emotionally, not protecting the relationship. And it's not always the case that those relationships ended because of that betrayal, that violation. I know people who've been in that circumstance who managed to stay together and are glad they stayed together. So I feel honor-bound to share that too, to give you that insight too, because for you or other people listening, people have come back from this circumstance and are grateful to still be in the relationships that they're in, despite a very similar event. Only you can assess if you think your boyfriend, you know him better than I do, you've been with him for 6.5 years, is capable of earning your trust. You're in a better position to judge whether his controlling behavior, whether his issues around control are fatal to the relationship and whether this cheating on you the way he did, putting your health at risk the way he did, is the last straw, is irredeemable. Not just can't come back from it and that he can't earn his way back into your good graces, that you can't trust him again, but that he's unlikely to change, that this is part of a pattern going back 6.5 years. And if it is, then I think you should be done. And it sounds like you are done. So back to that tool in your hand, the phone in your hand, give him a call, send him a text, tell him it's over.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 34-year-old male. I have a dilemma I was hoping you can help me with. My significant other and I have been dating for about 17 years now, since high school. I'm her only sexual partner she's had before, and she wants to have other partners. I was raised a one-person kind of guy. I want to give her what she wants. How do I do that without being so jealous?
You say you were raised a one-person kind of guy. Well, we're all raised. I wanted to respond to that by saying, you know, we're all raised that way. All of us are raised to be one-person kind of people. Everyone in an open relationship or a polyamorous relationship, everyone with a DADT agreement, all those people, we're raised to be one person kind of people. That's what I wanted to say at the top of my response to you, and I just said it. And then you called back to let me know that you were raised by conservative Catholic parents in a pretty straight-laced environment, while your girlfriend's parents were swingers. So maybe your girlfriend wasn't raised to be a one-person kind of girl, but I suspect that she still was. I suspect that the fact that her parents were swingers wasn't something that she was aware of while she was growing up, and she was bombarded with the same messages about monogamy, about love, meaning being in love, being in romantic love, meaning you don't want to sleep with anybody else, that you won't be attracted to anyone else, and that if you do find yourself attracted to someone else after you've fallen in love with one person, that means you're not in love with that person anymore. Otherwise, you couldn't feel attraction or desire for others. Yeah, odds are, if her parents were swingers, if her parents were straight swingers, they were socially monogamous, even if they weren't sexually monogamous and did nothing, sent their daughter no messages that might complicate or interfere with the monogamy, the one-person-person messages that she was getting from every television show, every movie, every book, and even, by default, her own parents. All right. You can stay in this relationship with your girlfriend and remain a one-person kind of guy. It can be a one-sided open relationship. If the price of admission that you have to pay to stay in this relationship is allowing your girlfriend to sleep with other people, maybe there's a way that you can get there. Maybe there's someone that she could sleep with, or some time she could sleep with somebody else, or a way, like a DADT arrangement, that would allow for her to sleep with somebody else that you might be, well, not 1,000% comfortable with, but more comfortable with than, say, her dating other people, or sleeping with people in your own time zone, or people that you know, or sleeping with people that she has some sort of ongoing connection with. Think about a way in which you could allow for this, if you could allow for it. You don't have to. You're not obligated to. You can make remaining monogamous the price of admission that she has to pay to be with you. The risk there, of course, is that if she doesn't want to pay that price, that's going to be the end of the relationship. Sometimes the pay the price of admission thing is a game of chicken, and somebody has to blink or jump out of the way first. Could be you, could be her. Jealousy. Does feeling jealous disqualify you from being in an open relationship? No. People in open relationships experience jealousy. People in monogamous relationships experience jealousy. As someone very publicly in an open relationship, I'm sometimes asked by people in monogamous relationships, don't you sometimes feel jealous? And my answer is always yes. And then I follow that up with a question, don't you sometimes feel jealous? Monogamy doesn't protect us from jealousy. So you've doubtless already experienced jealousy, and there's some way in which you've learned to process it, work through it, handle it, so that you could stay in this relationship, stay comfortable in this relationship, feel secure and prioritized by your girlfriend in this relationship. You can do those same things, those skills that you've developed, processing and handling jealousy in a closed relationship, they apply in an open relationship. They become a little bit more crucial in the open relationship than in the closed relationship. But you've developed those muscles. So you can do this if you want to, if you choose to, if you're comfortable doing this, you could do this. And jealousy isn't always a bad thing. You know, jealousy reminds us why we desire our partners in the first place. Jealousy, feelings of jealousy, controlled feelings of jealousy can reignite our desire for our partners in long-term relationship. seeing them through someone else's eyes, whether the relationship is open or closed, you know, going out to a party or a bar with your long-term partner and seeing somebody else flirt with them or seeing them flirt with somebody else. That can make you angry if your jealousy is toxic, or if your jealousy is fertile, is constructive, that can just make you want to jump your partner's bones as soon as you get back home, or as soon as you get to the car, or as soon as you can drag them into the bathroom at the club. So don't tell yourself that just because you feel jealous, that means you can't do some form of openness. You've experienced jealousy already in a closed relationship, and it didn't end your closed relationship. All that said, open relationships aren't for everyone. They can be more emotionally challenging than the alleged, reputed, lionized security of a closed relationship. Hear from people who got cheated on all the time on this show. There's not 100% security in a closed relationship. Of course, you could get cheated on. So think about it. Think about what you might be capable of. But don't identify feelings of jealousy as disqualifying here. There may be other reasons why you can't do this. You require the emotional security or physical safety of a monogamous relationship. And that emotional security and physical safety is not 100% guaranteed. But maybe that makes it possible for you to be in a relationship, to feel safe and secure. And if that's what you require, you can demand it. You can make that the price of admission that she has to pay to be with you. The risk, of course, is if she's unwilling to pay that price, that demand could end this relationship. All right, before we get to listener response calls, let's read some listener tweets. Big Apple Maeve tweets, listening to episode 766 of the Savage Lovecast and wishing for an international day of boycotting racist, misogynist, and transphobic family members. Imagine if people worldwide said enough and turned their backs on the ignorance and assholery that persists. Hashtag fuck 'em. I'd include homophobic family members on that list and anti-vaxxers and people who are rude to waiters. And then I'd wonder why every day can't be turned your back on ignorance and assholery day. Yaps tweets, in response to the gifts arm race caller, I recommend setting a gift budget. Both buy each other gifts at the top end of the agreed upon budget for the event. That's what we do. It helps prevent hard feelings and gift budget awkwardness. And finally, Gold Dave Berg tweets, can you help me unpack why the intro to your last Savage Lovecast bothered me so much, Dan? I am a cishet male who sometimes dabbles in queer land and has always considered myself an ally. Your intro made me feel alienated and gatekept out of pride. Am I not welcome? Of course you are welcome at Pride. Think of the rapturous reception that PFLAG parents have always received at Pride. Think of the reception Kamala Harris received at Pride when she was running for president. Saying Pride isn't about you doesn't mean it's not for you. We want straight people to see us and to see that we are not ashamed and not hiding. And we want straight people who hate us to see that not all straight people do. So we want our straight allies, our friends, our parents, our neighbors, politicians at Pride. The only gatekeeping I was doing, and I will admit to doing a little gatekeeping here, was around that plus sign at the end of LGBTQ+. It doesn't mean all points along the gender and sexuality spectrum. I'm not sure what it does mean. I'm not sure what that plus sign covers that queer does not. But I know it doesn't mean that. It can't mean that. Because if there's no distinction that can be made between queer and not queer, then queer means nothing. And as a queer, I gotta say, it means something. All right, if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag Savage Lovecast, and now your response calls.
Hi, Dan. I am a nurse practitioner calling from California concerning the man who was talking to you about possibly using saline injections to increase the size of his scrotum, possibly doing injections into the abdomen. And I just want to say that from a medical point of view, those are highly inadvisable, because injecting something into your abdomen, should you inject some bacteria and you didn't use exactly very clean technique, which you kind of need to know what you're doing in order to do, you could cause a very, very serious, even life-threatening infection in the abdomen area called the peritoneum. And then in the scrotal area, if you don't know what you're doing, you might be injecting into a nerve, which would be very, very painful and possibly damaging. It could go well. I just worry I know could go so, so wrong.
This is a response call for the caller who was calling in about her bigoted father and her difficulty with navigating dating within those circumstances. And I just needed to address the nonchalance with which this idea of cutting out your family is thrown around, often on this show. And as somebody who, at a relatively young age, had to make the hard decision to cut out both of their parents, it's extremely painful and traumatizing to have to make that kind of decision. And I feel like I've had partners and people who don't have that kind of perspective approach the subject with a blasé kind of support, like, yeah, I fully support cutting out toxic family members. But, you know, being alone in the world in that way, and I mean, I'm not alone. I'm very well surrounded. I'm very lucky for the chosen family I have in my life. But it's like the hardest thing I've ever had to do is cut out my mother because of her toxicity. And I feel like this situation with this caller, I understand that bigotry is unacceptable and she doesn't have to stand for it. But there are ways that she can, I'm just saying that starkness is not necessarily necessary in this case, or at least there are steps before that hard call. And I just think that if you don't have the perspective of what it means to actually have to cut out your family members and your parents especially, I mean, that's some painful shit. That's some really traumatic shit. And I feel like the nonchalance around that subject matter, something has to be said about it.
Hey, Dan and Nancy. This is a response to the caller in episode 766 about gift giving. As a man that has been married and with my partner for 10 years, you know, we're not all really good at gift giving. And I think you're being a little too hard on your partner. And I just think that maybe you can have a talk about it or just kind of accept what comes to you, because any gift is a good gift. And one of my things that I like to say is, the best things in life aren't things.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for me or a comment about this week's show? There are two ways to get them to us. You can call us at 206-302-2064, or you can use the voice memo app on your phone to record your question or your comment. We love your comments. And email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. Bonus tweet, Noelle tweets, Savage Lovecast Sack Lunch is the best thing ever at Baked Dan Savage et al. This was a brilliant idea. Many thanks. If you would like to be able to participate in our Sack Lunch, it's our monthly online hangout for Magnum subscribers only. You got to subscribe to the Magnum at savagelovecast.com. Twice as much show, no ads, more guests, and the monthly Sack Lunch hangout. If you're already a Magnum subscriber and you want to turn someone else on to the benefits of Magnum sub Savage Lovecast, you can gift it at savagelovecast.com. Just go to the website and click on gift. Follow me on Twitter at Fake Dan Savage. Follow Dr. Paul Pottinger on Twitter at Paul Pottinger MD. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast.